From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project offers you a half hour of commentary, analysis, and when we're on our game, insight into the media issues of the week. So we welcome you. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Well, hello, Rex. I'm delighted to be here with you on your program.
On my program. How do you do? It's great to be with you, too. And here's Kaylin Brown, professor at the College of St. Rose.
Hello to you.
How do, indeed. Isn't that, how do you say that, Alan? How do?
No.
How'd you do?
Yes, my mother would walk down the street on Fire Island, and she would pass somebody she didn't like. She'd say, how'd you do?
It's just sort of a nondescript
greeting. She knew it.
Greeting.
Everybody knew it.
Absolutely. So we're always glad to hear from listeners, and our producer, David Gustina, tells me that we have had a ton of listener letters from last week's show in which we talked about Sinclair Broadcasting. He says certainly it's the most letters for one show that he's seen in a while. Yeah. Very interesting. Just for those who weren't aware of it, Sinclair, which owns stations in 180 markets, including CBS 6, WRGB here in the New York's capital region, Sinclair ordered its local anchors to read a script that talked about fake news and said that there is too much fake news going on. And some heard in that echoes of Sinclair's very strong support for President Trump. Sinclair also orders local broadcasters to carry certain coverage from Washington and commentary that supports President Trump by a former aide to President Trump. Have I said all that right?
You know, except that I would add something to it, which is Sinclair is also trying to buy more stations right now, and that would need FCC and other approvals. And so there's a suspicion on the part of a few that this is all to keep President Trump happy so that his FCC or whatever the appropriate groups are would not put up any roadblocks.
Right. It falls under his auspices, so he's the boss, and he can make a decision on whether or not Sinclair gets to finalize its deals with Tribune.
Well, not theoretically. Theoretically, the people at the agencies, like the FCC, would. But in fact,
theoretically,
unless you're from Mars, you figure out they're... Even if the people at the agency say, well, this is what the boss would want, doesn't even take a telephone call.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, for example, listener Mark, whose email, by the way, is Man of Peace. All right. He says, why not call Sinclair out for what it is, the birth of propaganda? They're picking up from where Fox News leaves off. But as history has shown, propaganda is an important tool to fascism and dictatorship. That is the direction that Trump is taking this country in. So...
I happen, by the way, to agree with that. I think, I don't know that I always agree with Man of Peace's letters, because I don't think sometimes they're all that peaceful. but he's exactly right on this.
So what has happened is now some employees in Sinclair are talking about this, that he won, for example, one local anchor who spoke with CNN said, this is so much bigger than us. He said, I don't want people to lose faith in journalism. And that's really what this controversy is about. It's about the credibility of local journalism when they're being manipulated by owners from far outside the community.
And local... when they're being manipulated by owners from far inside the community. In other words, it so happens, and I know, I've seen it happen, that station managers and others get warned off by a politico of one kind or another and insert themselves and say, this is not to our liking.
Well, local journalism is under threat on a number of different fronts, and it is the lifeblood of a community and whether a community thrives and is aware of what's happening with its government and how voters decide who gets to be in office and who doesn't. That comes back to local journalism. And statistics are showing now that local journalism continues to shrink, shrinking. There are so many fewer jobs at regular newspapers that it's getting harder to cover our communities the way they need to be covered.
Actually, that's true. And there's an interesting point raised in a letter from Matt in Kingston, who writes that a new study by Politico shows that Trump won more counties with low newspaper subscriptions, both print and online. So the news deserts are missing the context that intelligent reporting and investigative journalism provide. And that is one of the things that the listener Matt says is a factor in the election of Donald Trump.
Well, you know, Rex, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is that even though there's a dearth of news coverage, even if in some places there is news coverage, but it's news coverage which is predictable in terms of a political allegiance.
Aha, absolutely true. But in places where, I think Kalen's point is, in places where news coverage has been cut back and you lose some of that local flavor, readers are really left in the dark. There was a really remarkable incident in Denver over the past week in which the Denver Post, their slogan is Voice of the Rocky Mountain Empire. I mean, the Denver Post has always been a powerful newspaper. It's won some Pulitzer Prizes in recent years. It used to be a two-newspaper town, Denver, but the Rocky Mountain News expired a few years ago. The Denver Post has gone through huge cutbacks since it was acquired by Alden Capital, basically, the financial group behind what's called 21st Century Media. Now, that's the same group that owns the Saratogian, the Record in Troy, the Kingston Daily Freeman, the Oneida newspaper as well, and that just bought the Boston Herald, which was on the verge of bankruptcy. So anyway, this group now owns the Denver Post, and they were just ordering up some more cutbacks so that their newsroom that was down to 100 people in this massive city was going to lose another 25. And the editorial page did a huge attack, basically, on the ownership of the paper.
It's a revolt.
They published it for the readers to see. This is what the employees of the newspaper think. They ran a photograph of the team that was responsible for the most recent Pulitzer Prize at the Denver Post, and they blacked out the people who no longer work there in that picture.
Which is the majority of the people in the photo, right?
Yes, and a pretty powerful way to describe what's happening to the Denver Post. That was a brave effort by that news team to decide to publish essentially against their ownership.
And not incidentally, I didn't see the Daily Freeman, but the Record and the Saratogian both on their front page carried an AP story about that controversy, reporting about what went on in Denver. So it might be the editors locally in their own little way voicing their own protest to the ownership.
Now, and I'm proud, by the way, to have my column carried in all of those papers you've just mentioned. However, I did think that there was another factor in this, which was that there's been talk about the Denver paper being sold to yet more local potential ownership, in which case maybe the Denver Post people were trying to give a little shove over the side to the other guys.
Please let this happen. So, which is what happened, of course, to the Berkshire Eagle in our community and the affiliated papers with that.
They carry my column also.
And do you think, Kalen, that he mentions this because there is some other newspaper that doesn't yet carry his column?
I don't know, Rex. How about the Times Union?
Oh, is it that one? Oh, what do you know? How has that gone, by the way, Alan? Not the column part, but the Berkshire Eagle, since it has gone into local ownership. What's your observation?
Well, it's very sophisticated. First of all, they put a ton of new people on. They hired. They did a great job. They have coverage that most local newspapers haven't seen. Judge Rutberg, who was the guy who put it all together, went to some people who had lots of money, and they put it into the newspaper. And the newspaper has seen a tremendous number of awards and other things because, you know, they are the salmon swimming up against the tide. So I think you have to give the Berkshire Eagle a lot of credit. The downside, of course, in something like this is, okay, ownership is a funny thing. And when, as you know, Rex, the editorial page is known as the publisher's page. It's not always the publisher's page. So now if you've got a guy who's the publisher, it becomes almost an oligarchical structure, and that's what you have to watch out for.
I suppose that's true, but you know, you could get manipulation from an owner regardless. That's the point of Sinclair. Most owners don't fiddle with the content of the newspaper.
Do most owners sit in the editorial page meetings?
I don't believe so.
No, they're respectful of what their news team is deciding to do, and they believe that they have the right people in the right positions making decisions, and that is their job. They have the purview of news content and what gets covered and what doesn't get covered.
My point is that Robert Michels wrote about the iron law of oligarchy. Boss is the boss. in this case, I directly asked the judge, who has done a terrific job with this newspaper, whether he sat in the editorial meetings. Yes, indeed, he said.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
They can.
But micromanaging in any corporation, be it a media corporation or not, is often problematic for that corporation.
I know what Rex is going to say
decline
next.
Of the organization.
It's a great thing. It would be great if local ownership were to come in. I mean, one of the advantages of it is if you're walking down the street in your hometown and you're the newspaper owner, you don't want to be the person who your friends say, you're letting this paper just go to the dogs. You know, you want to be proud of your enterprise.
I agree with that. And I want you to know that I read the editorials in the Berkshire Eagle every day, and I haven't disagreed with one of them.
Well, then, they must be great.
So, you know, but I'm just talking conceptually. That's
what. Yeah, absolutely. It is true, too, that a local ownership might think of owning a media outlet in the way that you think of owning a local sports team. You know, people don't own sports franchises to make a lot of money unless you're, you know, owning the New York Yankees. Most sports franchises, especially in minor leagues, lose money, but owners have them because they think it's fun. They like being able to go to the ballpark and sit in the owner's suite or something like that. Or they like being able to hang out with the coaches. So it might be kind of cool to think about local ownership taking over the Denver Post with an eye to making maybe a little bit of a profit, or somebody buying these poor, beleaguered local papers, the Troy Record and the Saratogian, which are down to just a fraction of the staff they used to have.
But they do have good columnists.
They have some good writers, graduates of the College of St. Rose Department of Communications.
Yeah, and
well,
that's where
you go.
And that's where you get a chance, right, Galen? You get a chance when there's a great need. And then people who ordinarily might not get hired on a really flush paper get hired in a different place.
Well, that Troy Record gave me my first opportunity in paid journalism, and they are happy to welcome and usually have been happy to welcome new people in and train them and mentor them and encourage them on.
And let's remember
journalism.
That even Rex Smith was the editor of the Troy Record.
I had four wonderful years as editor of the Record, actually. It was quite something. And I did hire young people who went on to do really great things, and as I have done
as
at the Record.
As have you. You went on to do really great things, too. So the minor league analogy is, you know, pretty much
there you
know,
go.
Right there.
So I want to quote Bernie Lunzer, not somebody that I might often say, but he's the president of the Newspaper Guild, the national president, which is an affiliate of Communication Workers of America. And he had this to say about observing what went on in Denver, what the reaction to Sinclair, he said, an uprising is taking hold among journalists, a fight for the heart and soul of the profession. It is evident in the union organizing campaigns. It's also evident in the defiant actions of the editors of the Denver Post and in the reaction to the outrageous demands of Sinclair Broadcasting on local newscasters. An uprising. Isn't that interesting?
Well, no, I think that's exactly what has happened. So under what conditions do people go out into the streets with pots and pans? Under what conditions do people do uprising? Hey, let's face it. We all know that if you're a young reporter and you've got a husband at home or a wife at home, see what I did there, and you got to find milk for the kids and you got to put staples on the table, it's not easy to just revolt. You have to really get driven to it by, okay, this is the time we have to go out. And it's not an easy thing to do. You got to give a lot of respect to people who do that.
The public has responsibility, too. It's important that citizens are paying for their journalism. And if they really value that journalism, they will subscribe to their newspapers. And I'm not trying to sell it. I'm just explaining the methodology, because it seems people get their news for free often, and they don't recognize that there is an income stream that has been threatened by the online environment, and that if people are paying for subscriptions, they are supporting the quest of journalism to find the truth.
Yeah, you know, Professor, yes. That's very nice. However, however, I have to say that, you know, there's a lot of problems with that, because you say they don't have to pay for it, but they are paying for it. As we have just seen with the Facebook hearings with Mark Zuckerberg, you are paying for it one way or the other. Would you rather pay for something and support it because you know how that they're using your money to do honest journalism? Or would you rather say, okay, they're selling your data to make a buck?
Hold, please. So the congressional hearings actually accentuated the fact, but it was problematic the way Ted Cruz asked questions of Zuckerberg. Facebook is not journalism. Facebook is not journalism. So
well, we're going to fight about that, but I'll let you finish.
There's nothing about Facebook that is journalism. It's a place where people put their items up online for the world to see, and they whether they sign a privacy agreement or not, you have relinquished control of your content when you agree to put it up and you post pictures on the internet and you post information on the internet. And that is free game for everyone. I teach my journalists. You can go looking at social media and see what you can find. Obviously, everything there needs to be vetted and fact-checked and verified. But that is fair game. That's information out there to be had and used.
Okay, so let me try to give you what I consider the other side of it. I may be wrong, and we'll certainly get some letters on it. I think Facebook is journalism, and one of the things that sickens me on this program, makes me want to, you know, throw up, is...
behind the door, clear.
It's the idea that you guys sit around here and pompously say, you the professor of journalism and him the editor of the paper, I will decide who's a journalist and who is not. It seems to me that Facebook is making a series of decisions, who gets what data, who they sell to, what stuff is taken down because it's not acceptable. All of those are traits of journalists.
Not entirely. Those are traits of a publisher. I'd agree they're publishers, and that's what actually he conceded. Mark Zuckerberg, before in his first day of congressional testimony, actually conceded that he has responsibility for the content, which is something different than they've ever said before.
Exactly.
They've always just said they're a tech company.
Now, thanks for your support, Rex.
He's kind of conceding that they're a publisher. I didn't say they're journalism. He's a publisher.
Zuckerberg also said they are a service, and he used that reference repeatedly. We are a service. The service provides.
You think the newspapers aren't services?
Yes.
Newspapers are journalism. Journalism is a public service done to help the public.
Right.
Facebook is there to make money only and first.
Well,
it's
you
about
tell
making
that,
money.
You tell that to Rex's bosses, who call him in and discuss, I'm sure, like every other newspaper editor, making money.
The newspaper wants to make money. Of course it does. People like food.
That's right. That was Kaylin's point. How do you survive as a news organization if you don't get people to pay for your content? And folks have gotten so accustomed to getting something for free. What they're getting free from Facebook is crumbs. You know, if you assume that information nourishes the brain, don't look to Facebook for that good nutritive content. It's the crumbs in the bottom of the potato chip bag, let me tell you.
So, I always like those, by the way.
It's not nutritive, though. If you want nutrition from the content, you really need to go to stuff that you pay for. Now, in the case of public radio, people pay for it voluntarily. You're actually asking people to step up and be members, and God bless them when they do. And that's the only way that you can support the great content that people get on WAMC. If it
and
weren't
we don't
for
sell
that.
Our data. So that's interesting. You're exactly right. A little tiny, tiny bit comes from the federal and state government. But, you know, way over 90% of it comes from the people who decide that this is a service, to use your word.
Well, plus underwriting. I mean, you call it underwriting. We would call it advertising.
Yeah, underwriting, we could spend a whole program on this. Underwriting and advertising are not the same thing.
There are also proposals to try new formats to get journalists out there because of the financial issues that newspapers are having. There's the program called News for America. It's a new initiative where newspapers would foot part of the bill for up-and-coming journalists who would be partially funded by this not-for-profit organization, sort of like the AmeriCorps. We've talked about it on here before, but I think that we do need to look at other models. I think that's very important, and I think News for America could be one way to go.
That's
just
cool.
Like sort of teach for America. This is news for America.
Right.
That's a cool thing. By the way, if you want to contribute to this program, media@wamc.org is how you would send us an email. And we actually have a letter that we've got to get to here from Alan. I don't know where Alan is from.
How does he spell it?
Same way you do, with an A. How about that?
It's suspect.
Yeah. Anyway, he is concerned.
Who's the last kid you ever saw named, who was born in the last, you know, 20 years named Alan?
You do have a new student named Alan, but he is not spelling it the way you are.
No, it's the old British way. Yeah.
Oh, the old British way. Very good, very good. Yeah, quite right. So, I have continuously wondered, he says, not just sporadically, but he has continuously wondered, why the media intentionally avoid discussing climate change. And frankly, not only continuously, but also frankly, why that omission is not regularly addressed on your program. This arrives from a story in the Huffington Post. finding that Sunday shows, like Meet the Press and so on, like the networks that air them, have neglected climate change. And there are some statistics about that indicating that climate change is not one of those topics. You know, we do a lot of stories, I think, in the pages of our newspaper, but I do think that probably this study suggests that television news is not doing a great deal of coverage.
Well, frankly, Rex, I take great umbrage at this letter, and I'm going to tell you why. On our panel every week is Judith Enck, the former administrator for Region 2 in the United States. There is no greater person who is concerned with climate change than she is. We talk about it all the time. I talk about it all the time on our morning panel. So, you know, these traditional accusations like, how come nobody ever talks about this, and we, as we have always said, oh, really? Where'd you find out about it?
Well, this is all connected to the conversation we've been having, because climate change is covered by reputable news organizations. That's how we, one of the ways we know about it, aside from the fact we're literally watching our world changing before us. But that coverage requires financing, and we have to have the money to support journalists who, for instance, specialize in covering climate change. Elizabeth Colbert was
New York Times bureau chief,
right?
Up
and
here,
I
the New Yorker.
She's going to be around here soon.
Yeah, she.
right? Isn't that next Friday night, Alan?
It's a big deal. Friday night.
So that's actually
not
an event.
Not Friday night, but that's right.
Correct.
4:20.
Yeah, 4:20. That will be here. It's going to be huge, and a lot of people are going to be coming to it. Another good example of the kind of work we do on climate change here at WAMC. Alan, A-L-A-N.
A-L-A-N. Thank you, A-L-A-N. But to the point about the networks, I think one of, and especially the Sunday morning shows, one of the facts is that the issues that are covered by the networks in their regularly scheduled newscasts and by the morning shows is what's going on in Washington. And the fact of the matter is there has not been much activity in Washington on climate change.
Well, except that, you know, what the newspapers often cover, or the news agencies, is that Pruitt did something wrong, that he bought a desk, or he did this, or did that.
So the news organizations are paying attention to the fact that the person with the most responsibility in this country for paying attention to climate change is not doing his job.
But they're not exactly saying that. They're saying, we think more people are interested. We think more people are interested in whether he has a desk that costs a lot of money than what he's doing, as you just suggested, or not doing about climate change.
So anyway, this is an issue, but I do think that it is a reflection of what is going on in government, and that is that this administration is disregarding the issue, and that is a reality. You can't say we're going to cover what's happening. Now, of course, there's a lot of enterprise reporting that we do in our line of work. We bring forward stories. That's, I think, kind of what you're talking about, even with having Judith Enck on the morning program on WAMC. That's enterprise. That's your own doing. You're not just reflecting what's going on.
That's right. It's very kind of you to mention that, Rex.
Finally, here's a piece of email from Nick who says, give me a break. I say this for the end because he's upset with your comments about editorial bias. And there's just probably not going to be enough time for you to respond, Alan.
Oh, tell
Very slick, Rex. Very
trick.
Slick.
What a trick.
It's a trick. What can you do? Alan assumes that you're running stories that you agree with in all cases. What about stories whose outcome you don't agree with and still run? So there you go.
I assume no such thing. As Mario Cuomo used to say to me on our program, I deny it.
Whatever it is, I deny it. Okay. By the way, CNN has found that most Americans think that the National Enquirer is covering up for Trump. Surprise, surprise.
I'm sad that most Americans think about the National Enquirer, and I'm hoping that most Americans never think about the National Enquirer.
Well, they do, because anybody who goes shopping does think about
it. There you go. What can you do? All right. We're even talking about the National Enquirer on the Media Project. How amazing is that? Thanks for joining us this week. Kaylin Brown from the College of St. Rose, Alan Shartok from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. We're grateful to you for joining us on the Media Project.
Together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the bill.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Kalen Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. And Rex Smith is the editor of the Times Union. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.